Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Triple Hopped Session Series. I'm Charlie. You can find me on Instagram at CharlieAiling1 and at CraftCanGam.
And I'm Ryan. You can find me on Instagram under the Bearded Babler.
And today we are joined by another very special guest from the Instagram beer community. We've got Ellie with us today.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
So, Ellie, you're on Instagram at HoppyRaptor.
Hoppy_Raptor. Yes, that's where you can find me.
If any of you listeners would like to see Ellie's photos, which quite often feature dinosaurs, I think it's a good value follow.
Yeah, the guys have taken a bit of a step back lately. I think they underwent a bit of a winter hibernation, so they may reappear for the spring. We'll see.
Yeah, I'd like to see them make a return. So today we are doing a bit of a different format of show. Today we're just going to be talking through Ellie's craft beer journey, and we're going to be doing a series of these shows where we talk to people in the beer community and figure out how they ended up quite so deep in this very strange and expensive niche that we all inhabit now. So, Ellie, first question, what was the first beer that you really recall being as like craft beer that you had?
I think it was probably a Tuol beer, the Danish brewery. And in my memory, it goes to Hollywood. But actually, when I think about it, I don't think that can be right, because I actually don't think I had that until a bit later. But let's say for argument's sake, it was Tuol goes to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. I was working at a pub in a village called Blind in East Sussex called the Trevor Arms. And I was working with a couple of people who were really into their craft beer. And this would have been like 2013, mm-hmm. 2014. And yeah, one of them was really into Mikkeller and Tuol. And we occasionally had a Mikkeller beer, the one that's got the sausage dog on it. It's like dog walking lager, I think, is what it roughly translates to in English.
Right.
So we had one of those anyway, and I was just like, what is this witchcraft? And then we started to get in some UK craft beer, and like, I know controversial now, but Magic Rocks High Wire Grapefruit mm-hmm. was a bit of a gateway for me. That was an excellent beer.
So that first tour you had, if it was that goes to Hollywood, was that a goes then, a sour?
So it's just a really straightforward gozer.
It's like a traditionally made kind of coriander.
Yeah, I believe so. Orange coriander.
Yeah.
Sort of vibes. It would have been in a bottle.
Yeah.
Then not can.
That's quite an interesting first step, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of looking back on it, it's a bit trial by fire, but Tuol were really like hugely formative for me. And this was back in the day when, because there weren't so many UK craft breweries, or they weren't really, I don't know, perhaps on my radar certainly, but Tuol and Mikkeller were everywhere.
Mm.
You could just, you know, and they weren't crazy expensive. I don't remember them being.
Now, I remember having quite a bit of Tuol a few years ago, but I honestly couldn't tell you the last time I had one now. It's quite sad, actually, because I really used to enjoy their stuff.
Yeah, I don't see much of it either. You see the odd bottle shop get some now and then, but that's about it. But I think the one that Ellie mentions as well, that's actually on sale at Marks & Spencer.
Yeah, you can buy that in M&S now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had their advent calendar a couple of times, their Christmas one. And actually their Christmas advent calendar that I got in 2016 was kind of what started my like Instagram craft beer journey. Sorry if I'm just stepping on your next question.
No. Well, actually, my next question was going to be, you mentioned that you worked in a pub at the time and you had that first craft beer. Mm-hmm. What were you drinking up to that point?
Oh, just like cheap lager, Kronenbourg or whatever. Cider. There's quite a lot of cider around here in Sussex, weirdly. I don't know. Is it shameful? I don't really care. Yeah, I was drinking a lot.
I don't think it's shameful. Your journey is your journey, isn't it?
And I was also kind of getting into properly good fresh cask beer as well at that time. So like Burning Skies Plateau.
Yeah.
Like when that came out, and there's a really good brewery around here called Gunn who make an incredible pale called Project Babylon, which on cask is just so nice. Yeah, so actually at that time I was probably drinking quite a lot of cask.
Yeah, so did you kind of like get into craft and get more into cask in parallel, or when you started getting into craft did it take some focus away from the cask stuff that you'd started drinking?
I actually think kind of in parallel, actually. Yeah. I think because I was working in a pub, so I was working directly with craft beer and cask beer and craft beer. We sort of, you know, like tapping barrels and cleaning lines and actually really working with the product, I developed a real appreciation for cask as a live product and how much care has to go into obviously not only making it but storing it once it's at the pub, and what a huge responsibility retailers have to keep the product good, because it's so easy to screw it up and then you're just ruining someone's hard work, which is
I imagine it's quite a nice environment to be working in while you're getting into it, although I imagine frustrating to a certain extent, because you know you're...
It was at like a popular village pub right on the like South Downs way, lots of large families, ramblers, Sunday lunches, you know. All of the joys that brings. But yeah, it was good. It was a good time.
I've got to say, cask didn't really play a part for me in getting really crazily into beer. Ryan, did you have any cask phase?
Yeah, I think like before, like I drank like craft beer. Yeah, that's what my like kind of go-to was. Like things like, I don't know, like Tetley's on cask and John Smith's on cask. Like up here, that's in like every pub. So I didn't really drink lager too much, but yeah, my usual go-to would be like a pint of Tetley's, but then, yeah, that was it. Like, but then obviously discovering proper cask, that's like kind of a completely new angle. And once you start hitting them, it's just completely different, isn't it? And like Ellie just mentioned there, I imagine like the Burning Sky on cask would have been exceptional and a bit of an eye-opener.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think like it helps to be from a part of the, like when you're drinking that kind of beer, to be in a part of the world where it has a good, strong tradition of it. Like in Lewis, we've got Harvey's who have obviously been going.
It may be a misunderstanding on my part, and this might be just because like I never really got into cask. I don't get it. I don't know whether it's because I haven't had, you know, quote good cask, but it seems like it's really easy to completely fuck it up.
Yeah, I think with like, if you don't respect the product, and I think if you don't know what you're doing in terms of seller management, then yeah,
I feel like with almost no understanding of the you know how a pub operates, it feels like it's quite easy to get a keg beer right. You know, clean line, yes, run through a chiller, it's fine. But like,
provided you're cleaning your lines and your setup's all good, then yeah, it's pretty hard to totally fuck up a keg of beer.
Yeah,
but a cask is very different. Like if you don't rack it properly, if you don't let it settle, if you leave it on too long, if you don't vent it.
Seems like a lot of moving parts. Also, something that I imagine probably helped you nerd out a little bit while you were kind of finding your feet in the craft beer world.
Funny you say that. I'm studying for the certified Cicerone at the moment with beer with Nat, and we've just done two sessions on like draft dispense and cleaning and serving beer, and it's like mind blown, and I'm really wishing that I was working in a pub right now, or that one was open so that I could go and like be around the cellar and look at all their couplings, ask if I could clean everything just so that I could.
Walks into the pub for the first time after lockdown and doesn't order a pint, just goes,
so no, I'm just like, can I see your cellar?
What's your setup like here? Like, yeah. we've got a madam here, she doesn't even want a pint, she just wants to have a look at her cellar.
Yep, that'll be me.
So just kind of moving on in the journey then. So you hinted at the two-all advent calendar being something that kind of kicked off the Instagram thing. But certainly when I think back on how I started getting into this, like there was a kind of beer that really, there was the first beer, and then there was one that really accelerated it. So was there like a beer for you that really accelerated your journey into spending way too much on beer?
Um, I don't know if there was a single like Holy Grail beer that got me quite as bankrupt as I am today. I mean, like, obviously around that time, Beaver Town were just starting out. And I remember we got like Gamma Ray on keg, which for a like village pub in the middle of Sussex felt like a massive coup.
Yeah.
And having that like on tap was pretty special. And I remember it being like a fiver a pint and us thinking, oh God, no one's going to buy it. It's so expensive.
God, looking back now and thinking that that seemed outrageous at the time is
it's almost incomprehensible,
isn't it?
Yeah. And people loved it. Like regulars loved it. And yeah. But I don't know. I don't think there was a single beer. I think I just kind of had my eyes open to how much good beer was around me and then how much more I could get hold of. And then I was just like, well, I want to get hold of it. Like, why don't I have this? No. I need it all.
I remember the first time I think it was probably quite similar. Like I do remember having Gamma Ray on keg pretty early on when I started getting into it. And yeah, it was almost totally different to anything I'd had before. But even now that kind of feels old fashioned, doesn't it? And obviously Beaver Town are a bit.
I can't imagine being excited by anything Beaver Town produce now. I don't even know. I guess they're still a thing, but
yeah. They just don't really get any love in the community anymore, do they? Because of their affiliation to the big boys.
Well, I guess you've got to do what you've got to do for your business, haven't you? So,
yeah. So you mentioned the advent calendar. What happened with the advent calendar and your starting of posting on Instagram about it?
Well, Charlie, if you were to go back through my archive to 2016, you can have a look. I got given the advent calendar as a present by my boyfriend because he was buggering off to New Zealand for 3 months. So this was his way of saying sorry. And because Two Old's graphics are just like so interesting, they're really like, at the time they were super unique, and it does lots of like photography mashups and plays about with like exposures and lenses and stuff. I just thought such a good opportunity to get some like prop action, which kind of wasn't really a thing then.
Yeah.
And so like I just sort of thought, oh, what have I got around me? What's the can saying to me? What's the beer called? And then I just got really into posting, like taking the beer out of the calendar every day and then like every day uploading the beer with some sort of suitable surrounding. Like I took the, I think it's called Eight Ball or Black Ball. It was a stout in a bottle. Anyway, I took it to the pub I was working to at the time. And then, like, cleared the pool table and, like, did a whole setup with it on the pool table.
So you had a beer Instagram prop game in 2016.
Yeah.
You were living in the future.
Yeah, I know. And only, like, 20 people saw it.
By that token, what are your predictions for the 2026 beer scene?
Oh, I don't know, man. It's probably going to be... I probably won't even be on Instagram, will it? There'll be something completely new and crazy, and
we send it to
Will TikTok have taken over the world or something by then? I don't know. I'm quite happy in my little Instagram bubble. I don't really branch out into other social medias.
Fair. With your handle, Ellie, did you actually change it to Hoppy Raptor when you started with the dinosaur photos, or did you have a previous like Instagram handle, or is it Hoppy Raptor, a new account?
No, so I was Happy Raptor before that.
All right.
And so I just, flipped a vowel and became Hoppy.
So really, you started a dinosaur Instagram.
Yeah, I can't remember when I actually made that decision. It was definitely a very conscious decision to do that, but I can't remember when. It might have been the following year, maybe 2018. I don't know. But anyway, I thought all I'm doing is flipping a vowel. No one will really notice.
Why Raptor, though? Do you just really love dinosaurs?
Yeah, I really like dinosaurs, Charlie. In a totally kind of unironic, before it was cool way.
Of course.
Like, yeah. Jurassic Park's always been, you know, my top five favourite films. One year for Christmas, an ex of mine bought me, he went drunk eBay shopping, and I ended up with loads of Jurassic Park memorabilia, including one of the large video stands that would have been in the video shop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like back in the Blockbuster days.
Yeah.
Apologies for anyone who's like 20. Yeah. And you would stack all the videos in this big cardboard cutout. Yeah, so I have one of those in my house. Just really enjoy a dinosaur. What's not?
I've always wanted to ask you that. I don't know why I never have before.
Yeah, they're just pretty great, really.
The hoppy bit is fairly self-explanatory.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was Happy Raptor. I think because Happy Raptor was my Skype handle back in the day.
Okay, so moving on in the journey then, you've started posting the advent calendar beers on your Instagram using props before no one else was. Kind of what, where does it go from there, or kind of what were your most memorable beer moments around that kind of time?
I'm actually just looking back through my Instagram to see if I did anything interesting. So what would I have been interested in then? I think I was still quite heavily into Mikkeller and Tuol. But at that point, I'd also started drinking quite a lot of cask, and I got really into exploring more cask and like different styles. So like I was drinking quite a lot of dark beer on cask. Best Bitter took me a while to get used to, just because Harvey's Best is quite sweet and it's not really to my... Anyway, so yeah, Titanic Plum Porter was a big feature in my drinking around then, apparently.
Yeah.
Modern Times, they were a brewery who were quite accessible over here. Oh, and Founders, although I know that they're Bad Times now, but Founders All Day IPA, that was a beer I drank a lot of.
I remember you could get that in Majestic in like 12 packs.
Yeah.
But back around 2016, 2017, because that was when I started kind of thinking about IPA more seriously. And I do remember that you could go into Majestic and you could pick up like a 12-pack of that, and you could get like Einstock and stuff as well, which at the time was like, oh, Icelandic beer. I bet that's interesting.
Yeah. And Oscar Blues as well. The pub I was working at, a different pub, one in Lewis, had quite a lot of Oscar Blues in.
Was it Oscar Blues of Tennessee? Oscar Blues of 10 Fiddy fame.
Yeah.
The same
10 Fiddy fame. Yeah. There was a beer called Death by Coconut that was really popular. And the Belching Beaver Peanut Butter Stout. I remember when I first drank that, I was like, what the hell? Someone's just put peanut butter in a stout. Crazy times. And now here we are
in
the MCI world. And, you know.
With everything going in, every single adjunct going in a stout now.
With all of the adjuncts, And I have to agree with the chili in beer. It's never worked for me.
I feel like this is the second episode where we're going to reflect on the adjunct one, but we've had a lot of love for our choices there.
Yeah.
I think
they were perfectly reasonable. I mean, the chocolate orange, I think, is a very personal thing. It sounds like you've got some real strong personal feelings about the chocolate orange.
I mean, I do agree
about the mint. The mint and beer thing weirds me out more than the chocolate orange thing.
Yeah, I mean, chocolate orange is objectively terrible. We all know that.
I can't support that statement. I do enjoy Terry's chocolate orange. And I actually really liked the chocolate orange MCI.
Yeah, it's just another one that I missed, and I don't ever feel that I need to justify why I missed it, because
thank you. If it's not your bag, there's no point.
No, exactly. So you mentioned quite a few US breweries so far early on. Like, what were the UK breweries that you started to discover and become more interested in when you started getting more into the craft scene?
Beavertown was one because they were kind of the biggest one and they were everywhere. And Wylam, seems to remember drinking quite a lot of Wylam quite early on. Who else? That's a good question.
So if I think back to when I started...
Cloudwater in the V series.
That was what I was going to say. It was Cloudwater for me, I think.
Yeah, I think what Cloudwater and the V-Series felt so kind of secret. It was like this, it was almost like this kind of thing that it's like all of the cool kids know about this Cloudwater feat. Like, how do I get this V-Series? Yeah. What is this? And like going into Trafalgar Wines and stuff and now no longer existent bottle shop in Brighton. And like kind of seeing what was new and like chatting to the owner and hearing about the V-Series and then trying the V-Series and just being like, what the hell is this? And that was when beer started kind of getting hazy, I think.
Yeah, I kind of remember the switch when all of a sudden everything was opaque and blended Simpson-y. In retrospect, it feels like it was overnight. I'm sure it wasn't.
Yeah, it definitely, because the American beers that were, the ones that were more readily available, like Founders and Sierra Nevada and all of that, were still clear. Like, they still looked like a traditional pale ale. Yeah, so I don't know. And obviously, like Gamma Ray and Necoil and all of that were kind of hazier, but not,
Did you ever have a Nucleoid in the bright?
Yeah, when Nucleoid first came out, yeah. And there was another brewery that did Lupuloid or like something like based on that kind of name. Anyway, that was bonkers as well. Fun times.
I do remember being really impressed by them.
Yeah.
As you mentioned earlier about like probably not getting excited to have a Gamma Ray on keg, I would love to revisit some of the like beers that were kind of formative in how I started getting into it and see if I actually like them at all now. Like, do you think your taste has changed over the past few years?
Yeah, definitely. So my biggest example for how my taste has changed is the Duchess, Flanders Red, Duchess de
Bourgogne or
something. Yeah, that's the one. So when I was working back at the pub in Glynde, I was on the fun side of the bar with some friends and we were playing darts and the like forfeit beer was the Duchess because everyone was like, it's vinegar, why would you want to drink this?
Yeah.
And I was just like, this is horrible.
Yeah.
You know, this is balsamic vinegar. And it, to the horror of my colleague Mary, who runs a, she was just like, I can't believe you're using that as a forfeit beer. It's one of the greatest beers in the world. Anyway, cue like 2 years later and she owns a bottle shop and I go in and buy a bottle from her. And we kind of reminisce over this day when I was so mean to the Duchess and I was like, all is forgiven. She's just the greatest thing ever.
Mm.
So, yeah, like I've kind of got a real appreciation for those kind of really vinegary, acidic, sour beers and saisons. Like, but it just seems like there's always something else. Like people are just pushing boundaries now in such exciting ways that you just feel like once you get used to one style, something else is going to come along within that style and just knock it out of the park again.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what makes this business so addictive.
Other than when you first noticed that, you know, you had a palate for sours with the Duchess, are there any other beers that have kind of opened your eyes to that style?
To that particular style?
Or, you know, for any style. Yeah. So, you know, what?
I mean, I think...
Was there a time when you had an Imperial Stout when you hadn't had one before and you were like, oh, Christ?
Yeah, I mean, I remember having Black Malts and Body Salts by Tuol. Exact style of which I can't quite remember. But I remember thinking that on paper I shouldn't enjoy this.
Mm.
And then it was just, because it was just like the whole kind of thing of it being a little bit sweet, but then also salty and dark and malty. And I was just like, what the hell? Like, no. But it was really delicious. And I think Burning Sky definitely made saisons accessible, or made me realize how accessible saisons can be, because I think before then I thought that they were too complicated or not kind of drinkable enough.
Felt like beer for grown-ups, didn't it?
Yeah, it did feel a bit like beer for grown-ups. And I sort of thought, I never imagined I would be the sort of person who's got like too many bottles in the garage.
I'm even newer to that scene than I think most people, and I still feel like if I crack a saison or a lambic that's particularly rare or expensive, I'm like, I better enjoy this.
I mean, I don't have anything rare or expensive, but
it's all about having that lambic rack, isn't it?
That's something that I can only aspire to.
It's a very expensive thing to aspire to. I wouldn't.
Yeah, I would like a fancy basket though.
Oh yeah, the baskets are great.
Yeah, I'd like a basket.
I'll tell you what, that was one moment in my beer journey where I really figured out that I was properly obsessed with it when I bought a lambic basket.
Yeah.
Because you try explaining a lambic basket to a family member who has no idea what a lambic basket is, and you're trying to...
Well, you put it on your Christmas list, and they're like, can I check that I've got this right? Yeah. You want a basket for your beer. Yeah. But you really went for it, though. I know this is about my journey, not yours. But you like really were like, right, I'm going in. I'm going hard in lambic.
Yeah, I'm sort of all or nothing as a person. I don't really have a happy medium on these things. So
good for you.
Sort of. So bringing us up to kind of modern day then. Where do you see your kind of beer journey going? I know it's probably a little hard to project and look forward, but what would you like to experience more of as we hopefully come out of our national permafrost?
As we emerge into whatever comes next. I think like with lots of things, I'd like to see the importance of kind of pubs and drinking spaces to communities taken a bit more seriously, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, by I think more government support for hospitality in general is super important, because, you know, like, where have we all been this last year without somewhere to go and have a drink and meet our friends? And for the people who work in the industry, I can't even imagine how tough it's been. So yeah, I think that I'm really enjoying the kind of trend that's kind of flipping back into more traditional styles, and breweries exploring different ways of making, like new ways of making traditional styles, which is really fun. So like, obviously the Boxcars Double Dark Mild has been super popular, and that was a really exceptional beer. Like Cloud Water have just done a Best Bitter with Rum Collective. Track have done an ESB, you know, North have done a bitter. Didn't Daya do one as well? Didn't Daya do one on cask, like for a festival? Anyway.
Yeah, and Northern Monk did one the other half, didn't they? Last year.
Oh yeah. Northern Monk did one with.
It was Track.
Was it Track did that?
It was Track. I'm sure it was. Was it? No.
I don't know.
I don't think Northern Monk and another half have done a bitter.
Or someone another half did a bitter.
It was in like a really
you're right. They did one of the Best Bitter in a white can.
It was in like a really inauspicious can, and it
looked a little bit like a Samuel Smith's style.
Kind of have that vibe going. Yeah.
Yeah, because other half get their malt from round here.
Oh, do they?
That's interesting.
So they use the malts and with Northern Monk to produce the bitter.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know. I am seeing a lot more of that more traditional style coming back. And it's something that I would like to try and get into. I feel like I'm sort of grown up enough now to try and appreciate it. And not be like, warm beer. Yeah.
I just think like a year ago, Charlie, you didn't even drink like lambic or lager.
No.
It's quite
interested. I was a yellow boy. I didn't even drink stout.
Well, I think that's the other thing that's quite encouraging, although in the week that Track are going to release another tipper. ABV seem to be pushing down, like there's a bit more attention to brewing pails and making them really good and really solid. And I think Beak have really shown that actually if you can comfortably sit in that 5-7% mark, and even like, hang on, I'll finish one sentence. And sit comfortably in that 5-7% mark and pack bags of flavour without those crazy high ABVs. But having said that, 7% is still crazy high for a beer. Like if you're sessioning 7%, you're not going to be going for long. I don't care what you've eaten for breakfast. Okay.
It's one of those things where if you take yourself out of the bubble that we're in, and if you're trying to explain, to someone that you're going to have several 8% beers in a row,
yeah,
the look you get is like you do have a serious problem.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's not healthy.
So but, what is the beer experience that you're most looking forward to?
It is going to a pub and having a pint of cask beer. It really is. There's a pub called the Brewers in Lewes, which is like one of those, it's a free house.
Yeah.
Carpet, little stools, round tables. You can sit at the bar. Well, but I don't know what the situation with sitting at the bar will be when we go back. But yeah, super nice. The staff will wear shirts and ties, which is crazy old school.
Yeah.
I mean, I can take or leave the shirts and ties. But anyway, yeah, to go back there and have a pint of, Burning Sky Plateau would be ideal. Unfortunately, we've missed Harvey's old season, so I'll have to wait till autumn for that. But yeah, I just think a pint of something local on cask. Definitely. Oh, and then straight down to the beak for a pint of something yellow, hazy and delicious.
That sounds pretty idyllic right now.
Mm. Yeah, doesn't it? I've booked my table at the beak.
For the grand reopening.
Yeah. And we should be getting an Abyss taproom as well soon, which is exciting.
Yeah, Abyss, and they're another brewery I don't really have a lot of, but I need to. I don't actually live that far away from that bit of the world, so I really do need to explore more of the Brighton beer scene, to be honest, or Brighton and surrounding areas, I should say.
Yeah, we're quite spoiled around here. We're very lucky.
So we're gonna close out the show in a minute. Before we do, we're trying a new little format point. We're going to be doing some quick fire questions. We're going to ask these of all of our guests, and hopefully it'll give you a bit more of a sense of what they're about. You might recognize some of these questions from our previous draft picks from Room 101 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
First one, what's the beer that you'd give to someone to change their perspective on what beer could be? What would be your game changer?
Ooh, that's a good question. I suppose it depends if they... what they sort of drink at the moment, what they don't drink. I'd always want to give someone Burning Skies a Rise, because I feel like that's a really good entry for people who maybe drink, you know, lager, not craft lager, and really want fizzy beer that actually tastes of something.
Mm.
Probably give them one of those. I don't know, maybe, I mean, I did like Ryan's example from a few weeks ago, the Triple Fruited Goes series from North.
Yeah.
I think whilst it is bonkers, I think if you gave someone one of those and were like, that's beer, they'd be like, what? No, that's not beer.
They are pretty perspective enhancing, aren't they?
Yeah. And I mean, the same with like, you know, crazy pastry stouts, like the MCI series, which should not be drunk alone. They should not be served in 440 cans for a single person to drink.
No, there's 664 calories for a start, I think.
Yeah.
Also, can we talk about Cloudwater putting calories on their cans? That is so disappointing.
No one needs that kind of negativity in their life.
I don't need that negativity in my life.
Don't need it. All right. Yeah.
Next one. You ready? We might have touched on this, but what is your least favourite adjunct?
Oh, I can't really get on with chili.
Is it chili or definitive?
It just never works for me. It's not something, wouldn't be like an absolute turn off. And I really wanted to drink that Angry Chair beer that you were talking about that had chili in it. I would definitely give that a whirl.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because it's Angry Chair. Yeah, but chili for me. And also, I really don't enjoy anything that's too smoked.
Yeah.
Like a smoked porter can sometimes be a bit much. Depends.
I suppose you could count smoke as an adjunct, couldn't you?
Yeah, I suppose it's not really an adjunct, is it? But
I'll let it pass.
I think I would take chili as generally something that I would avoid, especially in an IPA. What the hell? Why are you putting chili in an IPA? I can kind of understand if it's in like a chocolatey, roasty stout and you get a bit of the warmth from the booze and then a chili heat at the back. Like, that sounds nice, but don't be putting it in my pale beer.
Brilliant. So, favourite hop or hop combination?
Oh, I'm still riding high on a Nelson wave. Just Nelson Sauvin. Dreamy. Especially in, Locals by Beak. God, I really don't work for them. Like, they just make an awful lot of really great beer. But yeah, Nelson in that is just absolutely dreamy. Yeah, I'm picking right. Nelson.
Day drinking or night drinking?
Oh, day drinking. Oh, I love daytime drinking. I cannot wait for Sunday pub drinking again. Yeah.
Day drinking. I mean, what, Ron, we might have to do a whole episode on day drinking versus night drinking.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think it'll be a good one.
Okay, and final one. You may have answered this already, but I don't know whether you view them as underrated or not, but most underrated UK brewery.
Underrated. I don't know. I mean, there's always breweries that shout louder than others and always breweries that get a lot more hype than others. I guess I'm pleased to see breweries like Abyss getting a bit more traction now. I personally feel like Lost and Grounded and Left Handed Giant make exceptionally good beer. Lost and Grounded make some of the best lagers in the country, and I don't see enough people saying that. Yeah, Left Handed Giant similarly make some exceptional beers across a real broad range.
Yeah, they really run the gamut, don't they? They make everything.
Yeah. And, you know, generally really good.
Yeah, especially the Brewpub series.
Yeah, that's West Coast Pills from the Brewpub series is just perfect. So good.
Yeah. Just drink that all day. The majority of this, like the pills as well, like they've just been so good. Like the single hopped pill series have been like phenomenal. A lot of love for them.
Yeah.
And Ryan, you really like the Left Handed Giant Blender series, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, the first two were exceptional. Probably the closest that I've like experienced like the Hudson Valley style beer, like over here. I don't think there's anyone else touching, like doing what they do at the moment. And then, yeah, just. Yeah, the first two blenders were phenomenal. Like really, really good quality. I mean, if you'd have put that in a Hudson Valley can, I think people would have fallen for it.
Yeah, I had one of them, and it was so nice because it wasn't crazy sweet.
Yeah, like, the vanilla were like just, balanced it out.
Yeah, really well. Mulled it out. Yeah, lovely. So yeah.
So left-handed giant or lost and grounded?
Left-handed giant, lost and grounded. Yeah.
I think a great shout. I don't think about Left-Handed Giant anywhere near enough.
I had a couple of orders from them during lockdown, and yeah, they're so nice. Like they arrive in really nice, tidy boxes. Like if you order six cans, you get a box that looks like it sits six cans rather than get like a massive box with two cans. Just little touches.
Brilliant. Well, that kind of brings us to a close for today's episode. Ellie, I just want to say a massive thank you for taking the time. Really enjoyed speaking with you. I hope it's been...
Pleasure, guys. Lovely chat.
Yeah.
And to everyone listening, thank you for your continued support. The feedback's been great so far. If you want to let us know about, you know, any format points, anything else to do with the episodes and the content, just drop us a message or leave us a comment on the post, and we will make sure we have a look at them and address them for future ones. So... it's been a blast again. Thanks to Ellie, and we will speak to you next time.